The show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, let's get right down to it. And we're here in Studio Al with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Can y'all hear me? The music's still going. There you go. professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, everybody. Welcome again to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the numbers to call in. What are the numbers to call in? I always forget that stuff. The numbers to call in are 1-877-4 head on. But we're going to hold the calls for about a half an hour or so because I do have a guest in the studio today. And I want to make sure that we get time because he's very busy. He's very busy, and he was very generous to take his time. His name is Sham Reddy, and he is running for Georgia Secretary of State. How you doing, Sham?
I'm doing well.
Good to
have
you here.
How are you, Joe?
Pretty good. What do you think of Studio Al?
I like it.
In the wonders of Internet radio.
Yeah, you don't have to go anywhere.
Exactly. All home-based.
Everything's home-based. That's good. Don't have to worry about the high gas prices.
That's right. No commuting.
It could have worked.
When did you decide you wanted to run for? Is this the first office you've ever run for? Is this the first?
Oh, yes.
So when did you decide you wanted to run for office?
In early 2005. I basically woke up, was frustrated with the direction the country was heading in. I was frustrated with the direction the state was heading in. I thought it was time for some fresh blood, a new generation of leadership, a new brand of Southern Democrat. I also thought it was time for the Democratic Party to realize a renaissance. And it was time for someone with the right experience to step up and help bring that renaissance to the party and inject some new life into Georgia's political landscape. So early 2005.
What were you doing before then? What's your
occupation? I'm a business lawyer. I do just general business law. I also do securities law at a large international law firm. I'm the firm's expert on elections law and campaign finance law. And I've got a master's in public health, so I have some healthcare experience, too.
Have
all the right experience for this job.
I think so. And
I have to say, too, you bring up a good point. You're talking about experience. Just recently with Hurricane Katrina and other disasters, we've seen inexperienced folks in government make things worse. And at the end of the day, you know, our government officials, our elected officials, are accountable to the people. Because they're elected officials, they should be held to the highest of standards. And because they're your employees, they should have the right experience for the job. So I think it's important that, especially with sex office,
we have
the right experience.
The whole FEMA thing, I mean, when the first Bush was around, pre-Clinton, he put basically his political cronies in there. And then you had Hurricane Andrew down in Florida, which was a disaster, both as far as the hurricane is concerned and the reaction to it. And Clinton, who a lot of people, you know, complain about, but, you know, when he saw something, you know, this was important, he put people who believe in what they were doing and in the power of government to do something, and also just people who knew what the heck they were doing as far as disaster control, and it almost instantly it turned into one of the best-run organizations. And of course, once this guy got in, he reverted it back to just throwing political cronies in. I mean, there are some things that really should be above politics.
Oh, yes.
And all that. And you're kind of like me in a sense. I am the grandson of immigrants, and you are the son of immigrants. And I read that on your bio. Your parents came from India and under very very harsh conditions they lived in, weren't they?
Well, they grew up on small farms. You know, I've actually visited their villages when I was a child. You know, no running water, dirt for a floor, straw for a roof. But they were, you know, they were rich in values and family and tight-knit community. When they weren't tending to land crops, they were dreaming of a better life. My parents' education was very, very important in their households growing up. It's typical in the culture over there as well. Education is very much emphasized.
As it used to be here.
Yeah. And so my mom studied to be a doctor, my dad an engineer, so they could, you know, immigrate here to America and really provide their children with opportunities.
Well, how did people who were and I'll say it straight out, dirt farmers, basically. How do people who grew up under those circumstances raise enough money to move to the States? That's incredible.
Yeah, well, they came here with just the degrees on their backs. That's all they had, were their degrees. But, you know, when you have a medical degree, and my father had an engineering degree, through some perseverance, they were able to find jobs. When they first came here, my dad actually worked for NASA, helped with space shuttles, and my mom did her residency at University of Alabama, and as soon as she was done with that, she started her career in medicine.
Well, I'm glad that they came over here, I hope one day to build a world where, I don't want to say this the wrong way, but I would love to have a world where your parents wouldn't feel the need to leave where they grew up in to make a better life for themselves. You know what I mean? I'm for the people of India, just like I'm for the people of Mexico, just like I'm for the people in Vietnam and all over the world who want to make a better life for themselves. Because when you come right down to it, we're all basically the same people. Everybody wants the same things out of life. Maybe some obviously different cultural and specific things, but generally they want to earn their own living. They want to support themselves and their families, and they want to build a better life for their children.
Right.
As I'm fine to saying, when it comes to a global economy, there are no immigrants, if you're talking about a global economy.
And the world is flat.
That's right. that's why when I hear them talk about building a fence over across the Mexican border, and those fences really worked well for Soviet Russia and Soviet China, by the way. Like, the Great Wall of China didn't really help the Chinese very much in the long run. That's when I read about stuff like that, I just kind of shake my head about it. Let me get straight to the thing here that I really want to talk about. As Secretary of State, what would you do about these Diebold machines?
These Diebold machines,
because
yes.
I am very, very much against the machines, but against the entire idea of having no evidence as to how the vote actually went. So what would you do as Secretary of State?
Well, let me start by saying that I definitely, I believe that democracy, the cornerstone of American democracy is our right to vote. And it's important that we have public confidence in our elections process and our voting system. And with respect to our voting machines, it's important that we continue moving forward with technology. In other words, I think it's time that we put in place next generation technology to provide for a voter verified paper trail. Now, all of my opponents agree on this point. Republican, Democrat, everybody believes we need a voter verified paper trail. But I don't think that's enough. I think that falls short of what we should be doing.
And what should we be doing?
What we need is a voter-verified paper trail coupled with a pre-certification audit process. In other words, rather than only using the paper trail reactively, or in the event there's a challenge or a recount, we should use it proactively. Prior to certifying any given precinct, you take a sampling of the paper to make sure it matches the electronic. If there's a discrepancy, then you do a full manual recount of the paper, and the paper would control in that instance. That will do two things. Number one, it'll make sure that your vote was counted on election day, and number two, we'll put market forces into the process, forcing the makers to make sure their machines work, because no manufacturer is going to want to have a paper count override an electronic count. Right now, those two pieces do not exist. So the key is in the process. The first step is putting in place the voter verified paper trail, individualized voter paper receipts that get dropped into a ballot box. And then second is, prior to certifying any given precinct, you do a sampling of the paper to make sure it matches the electronic.
So why not just ditch the machines, though? I mean, we spent a ton of money on them, and we're going to spend even more money on more machines to handle the voter rolls. Why not just ditch the darn things and go back to writing it on paper?
Because prior to the machines, we had an unbelievable number of cases of fraud, undercounts. It was terrible before the machines came in. The key is strengthening the process. On top of that, the Federal Elections Commission, under Help America Vote Act of 2002, has mandated that all states push election reform and adopt next-generation technology to do that. In the fall of this year, they actually adopted another set of standards requiring a paper trail. So with those standards, it's important that we also put in place the process to strengthen what we're doing here, which is, let's make it as accessible as possible to vote. Same time, let's put in place a process that makes sure your vote is counted.
Well, I think that, you're talking about just using the machines to, you know, just get better technology in there. I think if you go back to, I think the problems with the process before were a lot of the fraud was handling when you move the paper ballots from one place to another, where they were voting in one precinct and moved over. I think if you count them there in full public view, even though it's technologically simple, you get the most accurate voting. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I just want to ask, are you saying that because you think it's politically impossible to get rid of these machines, or do you really believe that there's a way that these machines can have the most accurate vote?
Well, see, what I'm saying is with the audit process I'm talking about, even if a machine malfunctions, we'll know about it, okay, because we're going to do the pre-certification audit, and your vote will be counted. So if you can continue to adopt technology and move forward with election reform, making it very accessible to people at the same time making sure their votes are counted, why not do it? If you go back to the paper ballot where you fill it out, what if you mark two choices? What if you mark two circles or two choices under a particular race that's voided or it doesn't get counted? The machines don't let you do that. And if they did, we would know about it. So all I'm saying is the key is to move forward, but again, put in place the process so that you know your vote will get counted.
So would you have... How about this then? Have a situation where you use, because I don't have an aversion to the machines themselves. I do like the idea of you can, you know, push the buttons, and
right.
I think that's real fun. But I really just think that the paper ballot, whether it's printed out by the machine or not, but I think the paper ballot ought to be the standard and not whatever it says in the machine, and then we check it retroactively.
Well, I agree with you. I don't believe in you do it proactively so that in the event the machine is found to malfunction prior to certifying, because we're going to do this audit that I'm talking about prior to certifying, so that in the event there's a discrepancy, the paper record would be the ballot of record.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
but that's only in the event of a discrepancy.
Yeah, well, why not?
But why not count the paper ballots first? I mean, okay,
discrepancy, then the electronic matches the paper. There's no reason.
Counting the paper, though, right? Why bother to count the electronics if the paper one is the one that's going to be the official thing?
Put it this way: when you add up 100 numbers on a calculator, and you write down 100 numbers and you add them up yourself, and let's say you do that 1,000 times with a different set of numbers every time, what are the chances of human error versus the calculator? All I'm saying is, with these voting machines, if you haven't placed the right process, and you take a sampling, you can do it in a timely manner. Whether it's, let's just say, I think in any given precinct, no more than 2,000 votes. So let's just say the statistically correct sample would be you count 200 ballots.
Right.
You could do it very quickly, and again, if there's a discrepancy, then you do a full manual recount.
But if there's not,
why waste the time to do a full manual recount when you know the electronic vote is correct?
I don't happen to think it's a waste of time. I think it's just a question of getting it right is the most important.
But if the machines are right, then they're right.
If the machines are built by people who are...
That's why the process is important.
Right. Well, if the machines are built by companies that are run by people who are partisan to begin. I mean, you talk about a calculator, you know, but if I had a calculator that was built up by a guy who wants certain amount of numbers to equal a certain amount, no matter what the
put in. That's why the process is important.
So the machines are basically here to stay, aren't they? I mean, whether or not you agree they're accurate or not, there doesn't seem to be enough political will to get rid of them.
Well, it's just that the Help America Vote Act of 2002, as well as the recent FEC guidelines that were adopted in the fall, require that we continue to move forward with election reform technology to cut down on election fraud.
It just seems to me to be a big boondoggle. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I'm not trying to fight with you.
No.
But it just seems to me that you can take all the money that you get from the HAVA and use it to train poll workers, and that way you have people there. And if you have a public count where everything's clear and out in the open.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to that. Let me ask you this. Let me throw it back to you. With respect to my particular proposal, what's wrong with it?
It's not a question of what's wrong with it. It's just that I do not trust an electronic machine that can be that you don't have any actual evidence. And you're talking about, you know,
but you would have
machines for evidence. But
no. But if you had the paper trail and you proactively not in the event there's a recount challenge, but you used it actually prior to certifying.
What would the actual count be when you're counting it for the first time? What would you be counting? Would you be counting the electronic results on the computer, or would you be counting the actual paper?
No, you'd be counting the paper.
Okay.
You'd be taking a sampling of the paper to make sure the paper matches the electronic. If it doesn't, then you do a full manual recount of the paper.
And would you do that in every single precinct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. If it can be accurate, because that's all they care about.
Yeah, that's.
But here's the thing, and we talk and really every other country in the world that does democracy, even they made a big deal about the election in Iraq. Okay, that's all done by paper. Like I said, Canada just had a full election, and they did by paper, and they had the results, you know, in about the same time, maybe a couple hours longer than it took us. Didn't have as many people, but still, all over Europe they do the same thing, and. You know, I don't know. It just says something to me about what the state of the country is in today, where people want this kind of expediency placed over your accuracy. Are you concerned that Americans are losing faith in democracy, or really just don't care in the idea of self-rule?
Oh, I'm definitely concerned, which is why I have come up with this proposal to basically find common ground where we could continue to move forward and be on the forefront of election reform, while at the same time make sure your vote is counted on and day. That's the key difference between me and my opponents, is that I will make sure your vote is counted on election day.
Well, okay, that's good.
So
I want to make sure we get clear on this,
yeah.
because this is important to me. You know, we're both from families of immigrants, and we both believe very strongly. I mean, both of my grandfather and your parents came here believing
right.
that they were going to build a better life for
well,
themselves.
Well, yeah, we almost didn't have the right to vote. We could have been born elsewhere. And that's why it's important to me that as long as I have the ability, as long as I'm subject to the U.S. Constitution, and on top of that, as an elected officer, I will make sure that every person's vote is counted.
That's great. Well, I'm glad we have this. What did you think of when we? I don't know if you were involved. You said you got involved in 2005, so obviously you, or at least you began to run in 2005. Were you
right.
involved in?
Yeah. Well, I have been. I'm one of the co-founders of Red Clay Democrats, which mm-hmm. is a group that I co-founded back in 2000 after Bush won the first time, and we have grown that organization to over 1,000 members. We've had 3 candidate training programs. We've held fundraisers. We have recruited several folks to run for office. We have several Red Clay members who are state senators, House members. The whole idea was to really capitalize on the frustrations of people and the young Democrats, young professional Democrats, to really help build a new generation of leadership. And since that time, we have. I'm very proud of that effort with respect to the Red Clay Democrats. We have really been involved in a lot of things. Even one of the things we've done is fundraising. We've helped with fundraising. We have adopted a model of high-volume, low-dollar fundraisers to make them more accessible to everyday, hardworking Americans, hardworking Democrats. Because normally, as a candidate myself, the pressure to raise so much money requires having high-dollar types of events.
Yeah.
Well, Red Clay, in order to provide access, we've actually had big fundraisers where we've raised $25,000, but instead of having a few people give $250 a person, we've had like 600 give $25.
Right.
And it's been extremely successful in branding the group, branding the Democratic Party platform and the things that we really hold sacred. You know, the fact that we care about the economy, we care about making sure that seniors and children are taken care of, that we care about health care, we care about preserving natural resources, we care about, you know, very progressive that works for everyone, business and individual alike.
Okay, so do you think, and I grant you, because as Georgia Secretary of State, you wouldn't have any say over this on a national level, but do you think on a national level we ought to have a real strict law about how much people can donate and who can donate? Do you think we should get rid of corporate donations altogether?
Well, on the federal level, corporations are not allowed to make contributions.
Yeah, but they always...
Now, they can make contributions to parties.
Right.
And that's usually where you see some...
The soft money stuff.
It's the soft money stuff. Well, as you know, there is a First Amendment right to make a contribution in the Bill of Rights. So we can't get rid of contributions.
No, but you can... But
what we can do is... At the federal level, corporations aren't allowed to make contributions, only individuals and PACs. At the state level, though, corporations are allowed to make contributions. And quite frankly, even though, you know, we're in a system, I'm running for office, and we've taken some corporate we've just small businesses being able to write contributions to any of these campaigns, whether it be mine or Kathy Cox's, Mark Taylor's, I would personally be okay with individuals just being allowed to make contributions. There needs to be some serious campaign finance reform. The pressure to raise money is too intense to be able to for everyone to be able to participate in the in our democracy.
Right. Well, I hope you're right, because I really think personally, I think there's too much emphasis on corporate ability to do things. I mean, the truth of the matter is that there's an attitude that corporations are people too, and corporations, as far as I'm concerned, are not people. They don't have the same rights as people do, and they certainly shouldn't be giving any rights that are equal to or greater than an actual human citizens. And I think really we ought to be limited totally to only citizens.
Right.
Being
but
allowed to
one run. Thing you have to understand, though, the campaigns are expensive to run. So really the solution here is, what can we do to obviate the need to raise money?
Well, television. Less money for television. Or require them
yes.
Of their license.
Yes.
To give free
yes. Years. That is exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. The broadcast networks are owned by the people. They never paid for their spectrum. They should be forced to provide a certain amount of airtime to candidates.
Or barring that, another idea that I had was using PBS as like your total political forum. I mean, it's public broadcasting. It's there to serve, to serve the American people in that sense. So we can have either PBS or as a requirement to keep their license, under which, they have to have a license in order to support, that they have to give a certain amount of airtime. Then you have to have requirements as to what's a legitimate candidate and what's not a legitimate candidate.
That's exactly right, because you can't force them to let every single candidate under the sun.
Yeah, forget about it.
The right answer might be you wait till the general, when you have, just a few candidates. I'm not sure. But the point is, if you could deal with the cost of TV, because that's what drives the need to raise so much money, and then on top of that, put caps on spending, then you could really make some major campaign finance reform headway.
In Great Britain, I think they have a system where they pay you a certain amount of money. They give you a certain amount of money beforehand, and that's all you're allowed to spend. And if you underspend, you're required to give that money back. I mean, there's so many issues. There's so many ways of doing it. I mean, the Diebold thing and just having accountable elections to me is first. And second is fixing the lobbying and fixing the campaign financing. I mean, really, you ought to have a balance of power. The corporations do have a big effect on our lives and whether you say that's good or bad. But they shouldn't have that kind of effect on our politics and will. It should be a balance of power between private industry, public institutions, and the media, which is responsible for being a gun. But what's your impression of the media nowadays? Is it really... I mean, I look at it and I can't believe some of the things I see on TV, whether you're talking about local or national. Do you think we're being poorly served by TV and newspaper news?
I do. I've been really shocked that that media hasn't been as... it just seems like historically the media has reported on more things a lot more quickly than they have been recently. But the internet has really been great for people, because with bloggers and with all these other sites out there and things like the Drudge Report and these sorts of...
Don't say Drudge is a good thing.
But these other websites have provided other modes of communication for people to be able to get, news. And granted, there's not as much you don't have as much of an integrity check. But at least we as consumers, we as people or citizens, have many avenues in which to get our news.
Right. Well, I'm glad for the internet, because obviously the internet is how we're doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think internet radio is going to be the next big thing. We got about 5 minutes, so let's talk about real quick what's going on in the Georgia Secretary of State race, and how many people are running along with you?
Yeah, there are six of us in the Democratic primary. The current Secretary of State, as you know, is running for governor,
right,
which makes it an open seat. And we all come from different backgrounds, which is great. I mean, it's a true testament to our democracy to have such a diverse slate of candidates on the Democratic side. And I feel like I'm the best candidate, given my experience. We've gotten support from the only one who's proven that I can get a support from a broad base of supporters. We've raised a tremendous amount of money from over 1,500 donors. We've gotten endorsements from House and Senate leaders. And we've gotten a good fair amount of media coverage. And we've been traveling the state. I've been traveling all over from north, south, east, west. You know, I grew up in South Georgia. So it's been nice to get back on the road and head down to the rural parts of the state and get out of the gridlock of Atlanta.
Do you worry that being of Indian descent, you're going to have a bunch of racism along those lines?
No, you know, I haven't yet. I've been very, you know, I grew up in South Georgia. You know, my friends were South Georgians. You know, we live in a state where Thurbert Baker is our attorney general. Michael Thurman is our labor commissioner. We have several people of color who serve in higher office. This state, I believe, is more progressive than some people think it is. And as I've traveled across the state and having grown up in rural Georgia, I believe that to be true.
But what's your, since you've been traveling around the state, what's your general feeling about the mood of people out there?
Well, on the Democrat, I mean, that's generally, these are the groups that I talk to most. And there is there's a lot of frustration. People don't like the way the country is going. They don't like the direction the country's heading in. They don't like the direction the state's heading in. They are frustrated by the fact that special interest groups and lobbyists and extreme elements of society have really hijacked the political process and have broken the political system, which has caused government to stop representing everyday hardworking Americans like you and me. And they're ready for folks like me to come in and help bring forth this new generation of this sort of solution-driven philosophy. You know, someone who can help come in, bring their experience to the table, and put it to work for the people of Georgia.
Real quick, what do you think our prospects are in 2006 and 2008?
Very good.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the polls are, you know, what I worry about is I see the polls are definitely anti-Republican, but not necessarily pro-Democrat.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying?
No, you make a very good point. You make a very good point. That's why it's incredibly important for us, for Democrats, to put forth good candidates, for good people to come forward and offer real solutions to these problems that are plaguing our lives, to show folks here in America that the Democratic Party is a viable and strong alternative to the Republican Party. I strongly believe that Bush's reelection in 2004 was not a vote of confidence of him. It was a rejection of the Democratic alternative.
Well, I think there were a lot of shenanigans going on with that too. I don't like to use the term elect when I'm talking about Mr. Bush,
yeah,
because there's when you get elected twice under tremendous controversy, and then you act like you got like 90% of the vote, I think there's something very, very
right
wrong with that.
And even though he won the popular vote, Bush didn't want what happened in 2000 to happen again in 2004. So he spent a lot of resources in places like Texas to turn out the vote.
Well, remember what the head of Diebold said about Ohio.
He would deliver the election.
And then he apparently was right on. And then again,
he's gone.
And, well, you know, they're having a lot of problems. I mean, the list of Republicans that are being indicted is growing by leaps and bounds.
Well, there is clearly a culture of corruption and free meals in D.C. that needs to be taken care of.
What do you think about what Governor Dean is doing on this 50-state process, 50-state party? Do you like that, or are you with Nancy Pelosi and some others who say that Dean ought to be giving all this money to them and let the consultants run the show?
You know, I'm not really sure. I'm focused 100% on my race to, you know, bring forth some pragmatic, solution-driven leadership to the Secretary of State's office to move it forward so that, you know, I can protect Georgians from scam artists, hunt them down, put them behind bars, protect the life savings of hardworking Georgians and seniors, also make sure that your votes are counted on Election Day, and restore public confidence in the elections process.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, it's 8:30, and I wish you could stay and talk, because there's so many issues, you know, that are important, you know, health care and the scam things. I mean, yeah. the debtor, so many things I'd like to talk about. But you're a very busy person, and you have some other events to go to tonight. So I want to thank you, ShamReady, for
coming
on the show. And we're gonna take a little break here, and then when we come back, we'll take your phone calls, and we're gonna talk about John McCain getting heckled at a university. All right, as soon as we hear the music, we can head on out. There we go. That's not the music. All right, we'll be back.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves too, from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree, and I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and when we do, it can be very hard for us to talk about it and get support, because nobody expects a man to have breast cancer. But I know one place to get reliable, timely information about breast cancer. Breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet that translates all those big medical words your doctor uses into plain English. It helps you understand what kind of cancer you have and what treatments are out there. It helps you get your head together and make a list of questions for your next doctor's visit. And it gives you all kinds of other good information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org. The first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
All right, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I want to thank my guest, ShamReady, for being on the show here. And again, the number to call in is 1-877-4HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And I'm glad Sham could be here and take some time out of his busy schedule to be with us today. It is what is it, 8:35? And it's been a rough couple of weeks for me, actually, for those of you who have been reading the blog or trying to read the blog, because I haven't had a lot of posts on there lately. You'll know that I've been having a bit of a depression over the last couple of weeks. And it's nothing too specific. It's just kind of a general type of thing. And I've just been feeling kind of down, you know. And I was wondering if anybody out there wants to call in and talk about that, because I think we're all kind of depressed about things that are going on and about, you know, life in general, with especially life under these circumstances, you know, with the Bush machine in charge and all that. And I realized a little later that one of the reasons I was depressed subconsciously, it was subconscious, because May 14th would have been my wife and I's anniversary, our fifth anniversary. And being a guy, I forgot the date typically, and I didn't realize it until afterwards. But I was thinking, just you know, maybe that's the reason, kind of subliminally, you know, Kathy was sending me messages about, hey, you know, remember us, you know. But it's been a little depressing lately, because just things haven't been going that great, and we're working real hard on the radio show, and I know I should be getting my reports out, and I'm sorry, Bob and Agnes, for not putting it. By the way, I want to thank Agnes for being there. She's doing, as usual, a wonderful job handling everything out of West Virginia. It's just real nice being able to do the show. You know, the thing about it is, it's funny. Doing the show is easier for me than doing the reports, because the reports have to be specifically timed, which means everything has to be written down. And if I'm too depressed to write, I'm too depressed to write. But I can sit here and talk and stuff like that. I wish Phyllis was here. Phyllis is out and about. She's had some other things going on. And I really do like having her in the studio here. Actually, I liked having Sham as well, because I like having just people to talk to and all that. What's going on? Let's see. Well, you know, John McCain, that SOB, you know, I'm really fed up with this guy, to be perfectly honest, because here they're playing him up to be this, you know, this maverick, or this guy who stands up to Bush, and it's all just BS. It's all just BS. And, you know, he sucks up to Bush just as much as everybody else. When it comes to really important stuff, when it comes to actually doing anything, he still supports the stupid war. He spoke at Bob Jones University. Not Bob Jones, excuse me. He spoke at Liberty, which is Jerry Falwell's unit. And you know, and Jerry Falwell, excuse me. Oh, man. Professional radio. Swallowed wrong. Oh, let me get my breath here for a second. See, you mentioned Jerry Falwell and you choke up. But Falwell is one of the big problems with this country right now. Oh, man, I apologize to everybody. I don't have a cough button here, so when I cough, and you hear it. But McCain apparently gives the same speech at every event. And basically what happened was, he was giving a speech at a, dagnabbit, let me load this up here, because I have to get my research going. I was so busy coughing, I wasn't able to get on there. Once again, the number to call in is, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And I really would like you to call in, because, it always helps me to have somebody to talk to, and there's nobody calling in tonight. That's really cool. We've been having some good calls lately, and nobody's calling in tonight. What the heck is up with that? I know you're out there. I can hear you breathing. Let's see. I want to talk about this, because let's see. I'll get on the thing. Oh, by the way, I mentioned the thing. Ned Lamont up in Connecticut was involved in a primary with Joe Lieberman, who he's trying to unseat as the Democratic candidate for Senate. It's the first time Joe Mentum has had any serious competition, and Lamont is getting a lot of Netroots support. And in the primary, he needed to get 15% of the vote to order to qualify to be on the ballot in the primary, and he got like 33%, which is remarkable for someone who no one's heard of in the over the last few months or so. And it's just incredible that he's come this far to challenge one of the more senior members of the Democratic Party and of the Senate. And I think it's kind of taken Joe Momentum off guard. But you know, when you go up there and you get a kiss from Mr. Bush, what the hell do you expect, Joe? What the hell do you expect? Quite frankly, I think we should have kicked his ass out of the party ages ago. When I want to vote for a Democrat, I want to vote for a Democrat, damn it. I don't want to vote for somebody who's pretending to be a Republican. And I hadn't even heard of him until, you know, Gore picked him to be his running mate in 2000, which I think was a huge mistake on Al's part. As much as I like Al Gore and, you know, think he's important, and I think he was succumbing to the fear. Arianna Huffington had an article about that where she talked about politicians just giving in to that fear. And doing things to, you know, to try to appease the centrist people, which, of course, means right-wingers. But, you know, he picked Lieberman because Lieberman was a conservative, so to speak, and because he had been critical of Mr. Clinton's, you know, affairs and all that other stuff. And it's like, you know, in retrospect, I look at it and say, what in the hell were you thinking? You know, and Gore could have picked someone like John Edwards then. Who would have been a much better choice, and Edwards is going to be one of the candidates running for president in 2008. You know, I am typing something. I'm still not, you know, I'm still new with this, and I'm still trying to get the hang of communicating two ways, because I'm not used to this. This sucks. Okay, anyway, what was I talking about? This is what Colin McEnroe, this is from the Atrios blog, this is what Colin McEnroe talks about the Ned Lamont vote. He said, I think 33% is a pretty bad number for an incumbent senator to give up to a challenger nobody ever heard of. Certainly the Lamont team members were staggering around like dazed lottery winners. Pinch me, Lamont campaign manager Tom Swan told a comrade. The Lieberman team was acting like they knew it all along. Can we count or can we count? Lieberman manager Sean Smith told a reporter. He was unpersuasive. It may have been a number that tumbled out of their worst-case game theory, but it certainly was not a number they wanted. The real number is a lot worse for Lieberman than 33%. I don't know how big the Lamont vote would get if you could tabulate the no-shows in the sleeper cells of delegates who plan to vote differently in the actual primary, but I do know a number. And the convention is full of party regulars, usually the easiest people to keep in line. Wisdom of the ages would suggest that the amateur voters are potentially much more rebellious. That's a pretty astute observation there, because, you know, it's a primary, and you have to be more open about what you're voting for. And 33% people coming out in public like that saying, basically, we don't want you, Joe, is pretty good. Hey, we've got a phone call. Jim, you're on line one. Jim, pull up a chair, have a cup of Joe.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Fine, how are you, Jim?
Okay, do you hear me okay?
Oh, I hear you just fine.
I hear you 5x5. You know, you were talking about, I think, McCain going to Liberty University and talking to the audience there or the graduating class. Well, there are a number of schools like that, you know. And I talked about one the other night with you, Patrick Henry. And, you know, let's face it. The only way that these people can be defeated is to take the war to their own territory in such a way as to not offend them, but is to make them see your point of view. It might not work the first time, but you're not going to get anywhere by calling them names or making fun of them or using their religion as a club to hit them over the head with, because when you do that, you just drive them further and further away. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what your religious beliefs are. These people have a right to theirs. Now.
Yeah, they have a right to their beliefs.
To theirs, Joe, and that is absolutely undeniable. It is
they have a right to their beliefs, but they don't have a right to be the only belief. You see what I'm saying? Because
well,
that's what they want.
A lot of these people are reasonable, rational people. Joe, people are scared in today's world, okay? They're scared of apocalyptic events. They're scared of these earthquakes, tornadoes, tsunamis, things like this. A lot of them have been convinced that these are the end times. A lot of these books that are called, I believe, Left Behind, these have gotten people afraid for their own spiritual well-being and the safety of their soul. Now, this is something that we're going to have to acknowledge, and we're going to have to go along to a certain extent in understanding.
I don't know. I don't know. It's to me, that's kind of like saying...
I'm sorry.
We should... We,
I'm sorry. It's not going to work any other way.
Oh, okay. So what we should say is that maybe if since so many people in the South are racist, that we should appeal to their racism so that we can get their vote.
That, but I think you can make anybody realize who has a decent heart of error, and you know you don't have to have such people representing you.
As far as these religious people are concerned,
there is no connection.
As far as some of these religious people is concerned, there is no help for them. They will not be convinced otherwise. Some of them are completely lost.
According to the gospel, according to Joe. But I don't believe that. And I don't agree with you.
You haven't met some of my relatives. Actually, some of the relatives on my kids' parents' side.
Well, maybe,
okay?
maybe right there, because they're your relatives. That might cause a problem there. I don't know.
And you haven't met a lot of the people I've met that you just can't talk to.
Joe,
I mean, how do you
I'm
talk
from
to
South
a, someone who...
I'm from South Carolina. I know.
Well, how do you talk to a follower of Reverend Phelps who's sitting there having kids holding up signs that says, God hates fags?
Well,
How do you talk to people like that?
Listen, Joe. I have seen Reverend Phelps in action, okay? And Reverend Phelps is the kind of person, as a matter of fact, he has gotten so out of line that he is under the threat of $100,000 in 5 years in jail if he appears at any more funerals for soldiers. Now, that's one chink that has been placed in his armor. And people.
What about Pat Robertson, who calls for the assassination of Hugo Chavez on television, which ought to land his ass in jail, and he still gets to keep his TV show?
Well, why not? He did it, and he, you know, he even apologized for
it. He didn't apologize for it. He gave this kind of half-hearted type of deal.
He did apologize, and, you know, all right, he said it. Okay, he said it. You can't unsay it. And, you know, after a while, people get tired of hearing him beaten around the shoulders for it.
And he should get beaten around the shoulders for it. He shouldn't have a TV show.
No,
he shouldn't be allowed anywhere near any kind of broadcast facility.
Do not raise your voice to me, Joe.
I'll raise my voice to you because this is ridiculous.
No, you know,
Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, they're crooks. They're con artists.
You're speaking the truth. You don't have to yell. I'm not yelling at you. And if a man who speaks the truth doesn't have to yell. Maybe this is one of the reasons.
No, maybe I think I have a right to be annoyed because Pat Robertson, it has control over my life. And
does
he gets
he?
To go on his TV show and say, I think we should kill somebody just because he's not giving us enough oil and still get to keep his TV show.
Well,
I think that's just wrong.
Well, listen, what about Howard Stern and some of the stuff he says?
Yeah, but none of the stuff Stern says is that offensive. Just because he says just a few obscenities?
What does he say?
Well, he's an immature person, but he's not out there telling people to kill other people just because you don't like what they're doing.
Joe, listen.
I've never heard Stern say anything like that, and I'm not Stern's biggest fan.
Well, I'm not either, but, you know, I see him do some pretty outrageous things.
Says some obscenities. You know, he's got a very immature attitude.
I mean,
if you ever see him on TV show, the only thing I ever see is these ugly, topless women and his whole expression, you take your pants off or something like that. I mean, I think it's really immature and stupid, but there's nothing illegal about it.
Well,
what Robertson's been doing, and Falwell, and Swaggart, and all of them, is illegal. They're con artists. They ought to have their asses thrown in jail. And I'm sorry that there's so many ignorant people out there, but, you know, if they won't react to reason, if they believe this Left Behind stuff, then they're going to suffer. They're not going to listen to me.
If what they have is illegal, why have they not?
Because they have a lot of money and a lot of power, and because they have a lot of politicians in their pocket. And they get guys like John McCain, who should know better to go out there and talk to his people. That's wrong. And they get guys like George W. Bush to go out there and talk to Bob Jones University, and they get other people to talk to these racist, these anti-freedom organizations.
Are you saying that is wrong?
They're anti-freedom. They're anti-American.
Are you saying
what they're doing
is wrong, Joe?
What do you mean? Their strategy is great because you know what? They feed on fear
right
and ignorance.
There, you just you
they feed. But we shouldn't be. Well, we shouldn't be going around pandering to these people. Some things are wrong. You know, a lot of Germans supported the things that Hitler did. You know, that's just ignorance. But they had their reasons to support them, and some of them were. It was completely impossible to talk to. You know,
look,
because, you know, Hitler took
Hitler
back the Sudetenland, and he did this and he did that.
Adolf Hitler came to power. You have to and read your history books if you don't know how he came to power. He came to power legally, and he did so using the levers of power that were guaranteed to him by the Reichstag. He came into a country that was completely torn apart by depression, and he was the unusual man with the unusual solution. And he was very beguiling, and he seduced a lot of people. And he
came into power because the French and the British refused to do things for the Weimar Republic. But when Hitler came in, he was aggressive and was able to take it. And since the French and
the
British didn't do anything, that made Hitler look like a hero to the German people.
What could they have done for the Weimar Republic? The whole world was in a state of massive depression.
Yeah, but you know the Weimar Republic needed time to get their financial affairs in order.
Do you know
because of all the nasty reparations that were forced upon Germany by the British and the French after World War One, and they wouldn't help the Weimar when the Weimar said, "Listen, we need a little help in this," and they wouldn't budge. The British and the French wouldn't budge, and they made the circumstances possible for someone like Hitler to come out.
Let me tell you something. Do you know what? Have you ever been to Europe?
Yes, I've been to Europe. I lived in Italy for a year.
Okay. Oh, I've been there, too. I've lived in Europe. But I want to tell you something. The rate of inflation was 4 trillion marks to
$1. I know what the rate of penetration was. I know the reason why they did. The Weimar Republic just kept inflating the currency because they didn't have any other options.
As a matter of fact,
they were incompetent jerks, but they were handcuffed by the reparations of the war. And the British and the French wouldn't let it. And, you know, the United States was not for all that.
The reparations were removed, Joe.
No, they weren't removed. They were removed after Hitler took over. Was when all that stuff happened.
What is your formal training in?
What is my formal training? What's your formal training in?
Mine is.
What is this? Why do you know? You come on here and you call me up and you start treating me like an idiot. You know? No. I know well enough. I know well enough.
Idiot, Joe, but you won't listen to somebody. The reparations agreements were absolutely
No. You know something. I've had it. Goodbye. Goodbye. Go. There you go. No. I'm not gonna sit here and listen to this crap. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and listen to this crap. This is my damn show. Okay? And you're gonna sit here and you're gonna tell me something that I disagree with, and then you're gonna tell me not to get mad about it. No. The Robertsons and the Falwells and people like that, they ought to have had their asses locked up in jail a long time ago. In fact, I remember seeing a documentary with years ago about Jimmy Carter and about how Jimmy Carter was going to start investigating these people. And that's one of the reasons why they got involved in politics, because they realized that the gravy train was going to end. And then they discovered that they could make a lot more money when they control the Social Security checks, rather than suckering the old ladies out of giving them part of it. And now we've got a situation where everybody has to get down on their knees, like Lewis Black said in the Daily Show the other day. You gotta be religious in this country if you want to run for office. You know, I'm an agnostic. I'm not an atheist. I'm an agnostic. There is a difference that I'm not going to talk about right now. But agnostics and atheists are hated in this country more than terrorists. And that tells you something about what state this country is in today. That tells you something about it. And I'm not going to sit here and have someone come on my show and say that you have to try to be reasonable to these people. You don't have to try to be reasonable to them. You stand up to them. If the Democrats had stood up to the Republican power machine and stood up to these evangelists years ago, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in today. If the British and the French had done a damn thing to help the German people after World War I, instead of making their lives miserable, Hitler would never have risen to power in the first place. You have to stand up to them. And one of the ways you stand up to them is you take away their ability to reach a mass audience. Pat Robertson has no right at all to be on a damn TV show. Anywhere. Selling his stupid, what is this power drink that he's got. Or suckering people out of their money, which is all they're doing. They're crooks. They're criminals. And you know what? The Left Behind people, I'm sorry, but I can't help your ignorance. There's nothing I can do if you've got it set in your mind that the invisible cloud being that lives in the sky is going to put the world to an end because we like fags and we allow them to live our lives, to live their lives. Yeah, Phelps has gone over the top, but you know what? He represents straight out what they think in quiet. You don't think that Pat Robertson doesn't believe the same way and Jerry Falwell doesn't believe the same way? Didn't they say that right after 9/11? Didn't Falwell say it's because of that that the planes hit? That God allowed him? Actually, I appreciate it, Jim. You got my ire up. Improved the show a little bit. Okay, let's take a little break. We're coming to the top of the hour here. Agnes, I know it's a little early, and I'm sorry for cutting you off there. But we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with more phone calls on the Cup of Joe radio show. We'll be back.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. We've got to thank our good friend Randy Rhodes for outing our BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week, which she did during a shouting match on the Larry King Show. No one is going to get a word in edgewise with Randy. They shouldn't even try. But young right-winger Ben Ferguson made the mistake of attempting to get the best of Randy and paid for it dearly. Ferguson vigorously defended the Bushevik fiasco, known as the Iraq War, but when Randy challenged him as to why he wasn't fighting in Iraq, if he were so gung-ho on the war, he made a most unusual claim. Of military combat age at 24, Ferguson justified his chicken hawk armchair war boosting with this unusual claim, quote, "I support the Yankees, but it doesn't mean I wear their uniform." As John Stewart might say, "What?" At least you can argue that Ferguson is following in the footsteps of his cowardly heroes, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. But that also means that he's an A1 genuine hypocrite, just as they were during the Vietnam War. Ferguson, Cheney, and Bush all let other men die in their places while advocating for conflict. So step right up, Mr. Chicken Hawk Ferguson. You are the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week, and a coward to boot. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites. Man, whew, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't do it, that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Okay. Oh, we're back. Oh, God. Yeah, I need to get a little more comfortably numb here. How's everybody doing tonight? It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, yelling and screaming at people. God, I never had to do that before. And I don't know if I should have to do it again. But, you know, it really does get me angry when someone gets on my show and tells me not to raise my voice. Hey, you know, when it comes to this show, I'm the decider, okay? I am the decider. And you know, thanks again to BuzzFlash for the GOP Hypocrite of the Week. And let me tell you something. Nothing galls me more than one of these little punk kids talking about, you know, how we should go to war this, go to war that. But then when it comes to an art down to it, they won't fight. You know, I don't have, you know, the only words I got to these people are four-letter words. And the only actions I want to take against them would land me in jail. And speaking of actual veterans who have done stuff, we have Gunny's online. Gunny, hi, how are you?
Hello, Joe.
Hey, Gunny, how are you?
I'm fine. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. You sound in good form.
Well, I just got back from the World of Warriors.
The World of Warriors? What's that?
That's Minot Air Force Base up here in North Dakota.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that. We used to say, why not Minot Friesen's the reason?
No, only the best come north. Only the best come north is what we
see. It's just cold up there, man. It's just real cold.
It takes stamina to stand it. But I want to say something to you. Excuse me. I'm kind of a little choked up here. I'm proud of you, boy. I'm damn proud of you. Yeah? You stood up against the know-it-all. Now I'm proud of you. And any day, I'll take your back in a bar fight or anywhere else.
Well, thank you, Gunny.
No, you got a. You said it, you did it, and you stood by it. And that's all that I care about. You are a good man, Joe. I don't care what somebody else's politics are, or somebody else's religion is, or somebody else's ideas are. But you said the truth, and you stood by what you had to say. And dang it, I just clicked you on, and I said, Joe's on a rant. I missed it. Dang it, I wish I caught it all.
You can always go back to White Rose after the show and listen to the rerun.
Every word of it, and I will analyze it just like they do in the NSA and TSA. I will analyze every word, and I'll sit down, I'll think it through, and I'll see what was said, and then when I come back again, I'm going to kick me some butt. I ain't going to play around with nobody. I'm sick and tired of these lily-livered little boys that say, just go fight the war. Just go, you know, kick some rag ass, all that stuff, okay? I'm sick and death of it. I've seen young women with their bellies full of babies pushing baby carts down the aisle to buy groceries for children that the fathers aren't there because they're in Iraq, okay? So, if somebody wants to have a real talk, come see me. Or at least have the courage to say it to my face and not come around with some hoodwink, hoodini, pie-in-the-sky guy, invisible being that's going to rape your soul up into heaven in his beautiful... What is it? What is that Bob calls it? His golden El Camino. Okay? Jesus, going up to the clouds. Well, get your butt there, boy, because I'm tired of having you here on my planet, in my world, walking around on two legs. I'm sick to death of it. I really am.
Well, you know, there's a reason I became an agnostic, Gunny, and the big reason is that so much, especially when you're talking about organized religion, which to me, if you're looking for something in a higher plane of existence, trying to understand the whole universe thing, organized religion to me takes away from that. It doesn't add to it. You know what I mean? It doesn't add to your search. It doesn't help you find the truth. It actually prevents you.
Religion is the rapist in a back alley telling some victim, I love you. You know, it's a rapist.
I hear you.
And that's all it is. I don't get.
Well, you know,
I don't.
Here's the deal, Gunny. This is what really kind of cemented it for me. Now, I don't know if you know much about, you know, my late wife. I talk about her, you know, on the show every now and then.
Hey, Joe.
And
Joe,
my late wife had, you know, she was a wonderful person. She considered herself to be a Christian, and she suffered a lot. But she always said that God was the one that brought us together. And my feeling was, if God interfered enough to bring us together, why didn't he interfere to make her a little, to make her not suffer so much?
Yeah. Hey, take some of that pain away. But no, the pain. Oh, goodness. These guys, they walked around the ivory halls in their fancy balls, and they talked all kinds of stuff. I've met them. I've seen these politicos, you know, these politicos, and you know what they are? They're what you call them, street punks. Okay? They're tough when they're talking, but they are always walking away from the fight. They don't get in it and get it done. All they do is run their mouth. They got their ideas, and they've read their books. They know their history. They got all this stuff they want to lay on you, but they ain't got no real manhood, Joe. But I tell you what, you got kahunas, and I love it. You got some chandeliers hanging there. You ain't a boy. You ain't a boy to no man. And
well, I know you wouldn't have gotten an argument with Kathy from there. That's for sure.
Oh, Kathy, your lady, a sweet woman for sure. Now, I'm not saying it because I know her, because I've never met her, and I didn't meet her before she was gone from this planet. But I wish I had, because I'm sure that she...
Well, let me ask you something, Gunny. Let's talk about John McCain here for a second, because this is a man who actually is a veteran who spent a lot of time in a prison camp in Nam.
No.
Okay?
No.
He ought to know better. Don't you think he ought to know better than to be pandering to Pat Robertson?
No. Stop right there, okay? John McCain was an aviator. He was a naval aviator who got shot down over an enemy territory. But he was not a combat vet, okay? Although he had been shot down while flying over people's houses, dropping bombs into their houses and killing their children.
Yeah, but let's say this, at least that's more than George Bush or Dick Cheney ever did.
Okay, well, that's fine. We'll give him he flies over people's houses and murders them in their sleep, okay? But let's not call him a combat veteran. He's never faced an enemy with a rifle in his hand coming at him with a bayonet fixed, ready to gut him and kill him if he doesn't take him down. And I'll tell you what, I have met that man in the field, and I respect him more than I respect some lily-livered, little Bible-thumping, self-centered, self-egotistical, some person that would come on and say, I know the truth. Because, Joe, I've been on this planet a little bit longer than you, and I don't know what the truth is. But I know one thing. I know what courage is. And courage is not downgrading an individual because they don't agree with you, or trying to tell an individual, no, you got it all wrong. Because everyone has their own take on life. They have your own take on the world. You understand it as you see it, as you've lived it, and it affects you, and that's how you get through each day, putting one foot in front of the other. But they haven't walked a trail that they may step into a punching pit and blow their foot off, because you see, it's kind of like these roadside bombs that kind of blow up and tear up these vehicles and wound a bunch of people. It takes more people to get a man that's wounded out of combat than it does.
Do you think that kind of combat really does something to people? I mean, there was a story over the last week about these Marines in Iraq that apparently shot a bunch of women and children just because they were angry about a car bomb or something, and they just went out and started taking it out on people.
Are you still with me?
I'm still with you.
I had to switch phones. The batteries are dying. This other thing.
Did you hear what I said?
Excuse me. I picked it up because I heard you on a rant, and you were dead on straight. Okay. You had your take on it, and this other fella, he didn't give you no room to breathe. He kept pounding down, stepping on your throat, trying to say you got it all wrong. But, Joe, I'm going to tell you something. You got it a whole lot more right, or correct, excuse me. I always use the word correct because I hate the word right. I didn't always feel that right was wrong, but right is wrong. And these neocons have done so much damage, and they don't even see. They have no concept of what seeing is. They don't go aboard an active military base and see the children, the babies, the mothers with bellies full of children ready to pop tomorrow
without a husband to help them get through the ordeal. They don't care about them, Joe. All they care about is their own little... I think it's an insane, sick little thing that they got going in their head, that they think that this Jabezus is coming down to with his golden Cadillac to give them a ride to their kind of crazy heaven that is really some strange twist.
Well, you know,
to hell.
Here's the thing, Gunny. One of the things that Randy said to this guy, and I don't have the audio for that. Maybe I'll get the audio for that next week. But one of the things she said, that there are a lot of guys who were combat veterans who beforehand were conservatives, but when they come back, they were liberals because they had to see, they had to put, you know, they had to walk the walk instead of just talking the talk. And it really changed them. And I remember a story, I remember reading a story about a guy who was going into Japan after the war was over. It was, you know, we had just taken their surrender, and this guy was going to Japan to be part of the occupying army. And he said he was, you know, all full, yeah, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get these guys. And he walks into a, you know, a place that's been like flattened, and a little kid just comes up to him, you know, and greets him with his hand. And he thought, how can I be hateful? And it changed him. And I think a lot of people who never experienced this sort of thing don't understand that, and they never will, because they lock themselves up in this little world. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. And you're right. You're absolutely right. You can't, once you've experienced something as ugly as that, you never want another human being on Earth. Not you, Joe. Not one of your sons, your adopted sons, to go through that experience. You don't want another human being to ever feel what you had to feel. Because I'll tell you what, when you kill a human being up close and personal, when you can look into his eyes and smell his breath, and when you open him up and you walk through the blood and the smell of human death in a mass scale, it changes you. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Some of us went insane. Some people say that I'm insane. You crazy old... I mean, they call me all kinds of names. But I'll tell you what. You can call me all kinds of names, but you cannot walk one foot in my moccasins. You can't take one step, not one, in the reality that I know, okay? You cannot go back in history and feel and smell and taste what I did. And you cannot, by any way, shape, or means, by any one of your fanciful invisible beings in the skies, erase it from fact. It happened. And the only thing I got to say is, Joe, you just keep on being yourself, because you are the man. You said it good, and I love you for it. And
well,
I stand on your side of the fight. And if they want, hey, I think we could clean out a couple of bars, you and me. Or maybe not, because I don't know if you drink or not. But you are.
Well, I've been to my share of bars, but I'm really not a drinker. Not because of any moral thing. I just can't stand the taste of it.
Well, I can't stand taste of it either, but at least it gets my head ready for bed. You know, it kind of puts me down so I can kind of sleep, and then I wake up the next day and do it all over. And sometimes I get a little rough with people when they get too testy. And I tell you what, you did good. You did good, and I'm proud of you. And don't you sweat it one minute.
Well, you know, I don't mind people disagreeing with me, and I don't mind people coming on the show and disagreeing with me. But I'm not going to have somebody come in here and, you know, say something stupid and not you know, let me get an answer in edgewise. You know.
Yeah, Walter. Hey, Joe. This is conversation radio. It isn't the guest tells the host what to do.
Right.
Or anything like that. It's like you want to have a conversation with somebody, but the guy don't want to listen to your point. He just wants to put his point in there. And by God, if you don't listen to his point, you must be one of them there. What are you, one of them doggone liberals? Huh? you one of them commies? by some small sense of the reason or the word, it doesn't make sense to us Republicans that hide and call ourselves Democrats. And
well, you know something? Here's the deal, Gunny, because if this guy had actually stopped and let me get, you know, a couple of words in properly without me having to yell over him, which is what I was kind of forced to do, I would have agreed in general that there are some people who can be turned. And I think there are some people who, once they see what's going on, realize. I mean, my wife was like that. My wife was a Bush supporter until I showed her otherwise. But some of these people are just too far gone, and there's no sense of wasting your breath on. That's the way I felt about it.
Hey, sometimes you just did what you did, and you did good because you yelled over them because you told them, hey, this is my damn show. It ain't yours, boy. You ain't got a show. If you was so damn good at what you do, you would have a show, and you'd be just another Rush Limbaugh out there spouting out your Bible-thumping BS. And I get sick and tired of these guys that think they got some pie in the sky because it ain't there. Okay? I'm sick to death of it, Joe. I'm just dead tired of listening to people tell me that when I die, I'm going to heaven if I just send them another donation, or maybe especially to their new Cadillac they're trying to buy down here at some fancy Cadillac dealership. See what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, sure. And you know what I always say is that, you know, I don't necessarily know what goes on after life, because I don't think anybody really knows that. But all I know is that if when I die, I wake up and I see, you know, guys like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell staring back at me, I don't know where they think they are, but I know I'll be in hell. You know what I'm saying?
I bought a ticket to hell in 1968, and it was January, okay? Yeah?
Uh-huh.
I bought a ticket, and hey, it's a one-way ticket. There ain't no redemption from old.
No, you lost me. What do you mean by you bought a ticket to hell in January 68? Does that mean when you went to NAM? Or?
No. I went to NAM in June of 1967. June the 18th, 1967. I landed in Da Nang. And for a Marine, there's a 13-month tour of duty, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In Vietnam, it was 13 months for first time out. So I got to see up close and personal all of Tet. Okay?
So I was curious of what you meant about you bought a one-way ticket to hell in January 68. Is there a story connected with that? Or?
Well, let's put it this way. It's a story for another time because it'll take up too much of the show. And, hey, you got things to say and you got things to do, and there's people out there that think they know and they've been there, but they ain't been there unless they walked in my shoes. And I'll give them my combat record. I'll put it on the internet and fax it to them if they got the courage to show me theirs. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I was a veteran, but I was never a combat veteran. Right. I mean, I was in the Air Force. My father was in the Army. He was actually at Pearl Harbor when it was attacked. I had my cousin Butch was a paratrooper in NAM. I've had cousins and uncles and people who served.
Got a long history, like a lot of families do. But
sure, I mean, you know, we're an immigrant family and we believed in it very strongly. And it really riles me to hear these little young punk kids. And this guy was 24 years old. Perfect age to go into the service, and he's sitting there talking about, you know, making some snide remark about, I support the Yankees, but I don't wear the uniform. That's outrageous. You support the war. If you think it's that important, you go out and fight. And my dad would tell me, and my older relatives would tell me, that if there were guys in the 40s who were not in uniform, and they didn't have an obvious physical disability like a lost limb, they would be shouted out at the streets. They would be yelled at. They would be ridiculed because you were expected to do your duty.
We live in a bubble here in the United States. The whole damn country is under a big Bush bubble. You know, everybody thinks they know everything about everything. They talk a lot. And, hey, Joe, I take them on everywhere I meet them. I do, because they talk, and they they got all the answers. They tell you all what happened on 9/11. Excuse me.
All right, take it easy.
They know what took them buildings down, because it was two planes and a couple of pilots from where were they? Iraq? No. They were from someplace else. But they got all the answers as long as they fit into their narrow little minds.
Right.
And the thing is, it's narrowness when you cannot look outside of yourself. Like Mike Malloy says, it'll be beautiful when we all the people of the earth stop thinking in races and start interbreeding, you know, until there's only one color, and there'll be a beautiful mocha, okay? And we'll get rid of all this Chicano and the Africano and the Americano and the English and the Brits, and they'll all be one beautiful color. And guess what? When you're not thinking about your race and your God and your beliefs, and we're all the same, guess what? There's no reason to kill somebody that's the same kind of person as you are. And that's the kind of thing I do. I am not racial. I have no race. It doesn't matter if I'm pink and the other guy's brown, or the other guy's a mahogany color, or a oriental extraction, because they're all human. See? To me, there is no difference, no separation. I have no race. I'm a human being, but I'm a mean SOB if you get me mad, and that's why I heard it in you tonight. You got some kahunas, yeah? And I'm proud of you, but I got to let you go so you can go do the rest of your show. And, Cup of Joe, you the man. You the man tonight, and I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you very much, Gunny. I appreciate it. And I'm always glad to have you call. Always nice to have a fellow veteran. And like I said, you know, I'm not a combat veteran. I was in the U.S. Air Force.
Hey, I walk amongst young men and their young ladies, and I do it occasionally. Sometimes I get over there more. But lately I've gotten over there more than I should, but I just like being among these young men and women that have given everything. And, in fact, they put their lives on the line every day, and then some old fart, okay, that thinks he knows everything because he had some clearance way back when, and he worked for some in some office somewhere and pushed some papers and push some numbers around and knows all about everything, but I don't know his combat record tells men across the nation and across the world what it's like, okay? And they don't know squat. They don't know squat, Joe. They talk and they talk and they talk and they talk, but they don't know squat. They just tell everybody everything. They tell, hey, you don't believe the way I believe, then therefore you must be not of my kind. Well, I don't care what you believe, because believe this. Belief is just believing. But when I push your teeth back into the back of your skull with my fist, it will not be belief. It will be factual reality.
Well, you know, back in the day, we used to do that sort of stuff with baseball bat, but I don't think we have the cojones for that much anymore. And you know, I agree with you. I think in the long run, we're gonna have a world where there is no race. But to me, the question is how much bloodshed there's gonna be before we get to that point. And I'm hoping that there's very little, but I'm afraid that there's going to be a lot. And I think it's going to be very, very bad before it gets any better. Gunny, again, thanks for the call. We gotta take a break here. We're coming in at the bottom of the hour, and we have a half an hour left for the show. And thanks again. Gunny, you're always welcome to be on the show. Okay, we'll be back for the last half hour. WJO Radio Show.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he a guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. It's not so humble host Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And we've got a half an hour left if anybody wants to call up and talk a little bit more. Always good to have Gunny on. Always good to have Gunny on because he's been there. He's a veteran. And, you know, we have a lot of Democratic veterans, but, of course, you know, nobody likes to talk about them. Democratic veterans get dumped on more often than not, you know, while Republicans who have never served anything, they get praised for their heroism, right? Cowards. This is something from Attitude that I got via Atrios, and these are two quotes, and I want to compare them because it just goes to show that where we stand today. This is from Patrick Henry, March 23rd, 1775, and he said, "Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." And that, of course, is one of the most famous speeches in American history. So here we have Senator Pat Roberts just a couple of days ago. He says, "You have no civil liberties if you're dead." Yep. That's how we've fallen in this country, ladies and gentlemen. That's how far we've gone. I mean, this is, he was in reference to the NSA spying thing, where, you know, Mr. Bush and his political cronies and everybody involved in that whole mishigash have been basically spying on us, listening to our phones, and they got General Hayden up there, who was the new candidate to be head of the NSA, which is basically the new way of moving operations over from the CIA, where they had some legal restraints, at least theoretically, into an area where there is no legal restraints, where they can do anything they want. That's basically their attitude. You know, we can do anything we want, and the hell with everybody else. And, you know, that's slowly moving towards monarchy. I have a term for what's going on, and I'm busy writing a post for that, and I haven't been writing much because I've been depressed, but there are things that I'm working on. I'm working on a rewrite of my old Pax Liberalis post from years ago on my former blog, Pax Liberalis, which basically means the free peace. But I think we've fallen pretty damn low in this country. I think it's really saying that a United States senator will sit there and openly advocate losing our rights for the sake of security. And I think it was Benjamin Franklin who said, he who gives up security for freedom deserves neither security or freedom. Those who give up freedom for security deserve neither security nor freedom. And he's right. Our laws and the rule of laws, that's what we have to base it on. That's what everything we live for is based upon. And I'm really, really worried that we've gotten to the point in this country where we're willing to just give up our democratic rights right away. I mean, I would say that there are at least a third of the people in this country would be willing to get rid of the entire democratic system so long as we had some sort of benign constitutional dictatorship of some sort. And using another word, of course, because if you said dictatorship, nobody would go for it. But I think that if you could say you don't have to vote anymore, you don't have to participate in government, a lot of people would be just fine with that and let other people handle it and just hope and pray that they have your best interest at heart. Because, you know, when you cede control of the government like that, then, you're no longer a citizen, you're a subject. And being a citizen is a hard thing. Being a citizen of a free public is a very, very difficult thing because it requires you to be informed. It requires you to be politically active. It requires you to be knowledgeable, to have a little historical precedent. And it generally takes, if you look back at history, there have been three great republics. And the first one was the Athenians, and the second one was the Romans, and the third one is America. And the Athenians, it took about 200 years, but they fell because, gee, what a surprise, a few rich and greedy people took hold of the reins of power of government and decided they had to be, you know, Mr. Big Shot and rule an empire, and they destroyed themselves. The Romans went from republic to empire. They lasted longer because what happened with the Athenians is they got trashed in Sicily, so they weren't able to continue as an empire. The Romans continued as an empire for many, many years because they built a solid social infrastructure and were decent at organizing and were excellent engineers and generally, you know, made at least the creature comforts of their subject peoples a little bit better than what they had been, although they were vicious SOBs, the Romans were. But eventually the Roman Empire fell. And we've gotten to that just about that point here in America. And even if we manage to turn the tide at this point, you know, these people will be back. Because there's always going to be a group of people who are hungry for money and power and are very, very good at getting it. And it's always a fight to get that. But I think, you know, it says something when I was talking to Sham earlier. I think it really does say something that it seems to be a consensus that we're not going to get rid of the machines and the Diebold machines, and the best that we can do is just use them, you know, in a way. And I hope that he can, if he gets elected as Secretary of State, I hope that he can implement a system, a process, by which the most accurate result is what we get. And to me, that's the most important thing. And how did we get to where we are? And that's a question here. I mean, I talked about it earlier. If you got to stand up to these people early on, and you got to stomp on them hard and quickly before they have a chance to catch hold. And unfortunately, we didn't do that. Who's calling me up? I'm just going to let that phone ring because nobody ought to be calling me up while I'm doing my radio show. This is one of the drawbacks of doing a show at home. Hey, you know what I'll do? I think I'll hold on. Let me see if I'll... Maybe I can get the mic over there. No, the mic's not long enough. Just to see who's called. Just to see who's calling up. It's 22. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see who's calling up here. Hang on. No, it's somebody from Defenders of Democracy calling me now. Hang on a second. Hang on a second. Let me get this phone here. Hang on. Hi, John Fortune, everybody. This is John Fortune. Can you say hi there, John? Everybody's fine. John, I'm live on the air right now, John. No, you can't be heard, John, because you're calling on my phone. And you see, and the phone isn't hooked up into the computer. But I really do kind of sort of have to ask you to call back a little later. Because I'm actually talking to you while I'm on the radio here. Okay. Professional radio. Ladies and gentlemen, that was John Fortune from Defenders of Democracy. And you know what? I knocked over my headphones going to get the phone. Give me just a second here. Let me get this taken care of. Yeah, let's do that, Agnes. Let's go ahead and do that because I need to test these headphones out anyway. I don't know if I pulled the plug on them or not. I'm sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. Professional radio. Woohoo! We got it all here at the Head On Network. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Bruce Hornsby. You know the expression, practice makes perfect? Well, it certainly is true in music. And practicing music is one of the most valuable ways a student can spend his time, or her time. A young person who studies music reinforces teamwork, communication skills, self-discipline, and creativity. All qualities kids need to be successful in their other schoolwork. Parents, think about encouraging your kids to try out several instruments at school until they find the one that they really like, the one that really clicks for them. Get to know the school's music teacher and encourage your child to join school music ensembles. And please don't forget that your kids all have an instrument that's free and sounds wonderful, their voices.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
The First Amendment reads, people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak.
The odds are the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back, and I'm drinking alone here tonight. How's everybody doing? Man, what a wild show. Oh, my goodness. You know, it started out great, and I wish Shan could have stayed a little bit longer because it was real nice talking to him. And then we had Jim call up, and he got me all angry. And, you know, it was great having Gunny on. And then right in the middle of a rant about something, I get a phone call. You know, I come to this show from many a part of the world, and I've done a lot of things, but I ain't never had anything happen like what happened just now. Good Lord Almighty. I know the feeling too, Agnes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what's going on here? What the heck was I talking about? Well, let me talk about this. And we got about 12 minutes or so, maybe 10, 12 minutes or so. Let me talk about this real quick because it goes to the heart of what our strategy ought to be as far as that sort of thing. And it happened last week, and I tried to get both of the guys on the show, and unfortunately they were both busy to talk about this. And I had a post on the blog called Is Winning Losing? And we were talking about the 2006 elections. And, you know, I'm very, very cynical about what our chances are. In 2006, frankly, I don't think we're gonna retake the House. You know, that's just how I feel. I don't think we're gonna retake the House in 2006. Not because I think we're doing anything wrong, or I think that, you know, that the popular mood is against us. I think just because so much gerrymandering and so much election fraud, and it's the same old story. I've said it, you know, time and time again. That's just the way things are right now. And I think it's important that we continue to work towards building a foundation, because just winning isn't enough. You see what I'm saying? Just winning an election isn't enough. And we have to work towards building a foundation. And we can't really build a foundation, or we can't really have, you know, elected officials if we don't have something to back them up. You know what I mean? You know, that's the problem I've had with the Green parties and the Libertarians all these years. They sit there and they worry so much about electing the president, but they're not building anything above it. So that even if you had a Libertarian or a Green president, he or she wouldn't be able to do anything, because he or she wouldn't have any support in Congress or in the Senate. You know, you've got to build that. And the Democratic Party leadership right now is in disarray. And you got guys like Joe Lieberman who are getting ready, hopefully, to get kicked out by newcomers. And he deserves to be kicked out. At the very least, he should be kicked out of the party. Excuse me a second. At the very least, we ought to have kicked his ass out of the party ages ago, because he's not acting like a Democrat. Yeah, I know he votes like a Democrat and he's got a very liberal record, blah, blah, blah. But I don't want somebody up there sucking up to George W. Bush. And kissing him and hugging him and, you know, good old touchy, gropey feeling and some sort of brokerback mountain kind of deal. You know, I don't want that. I want a Democrat, and I want a damn partisan Democrat. And you try to tell people that, and, you know, a lot of it is just basically, you know, well, you know, we should win, blah, blah, blah. And there are basically two sets of thoughts about that. And really, they don't necessarily disagree with each other. And, It was something that came up, and it was basically about the same day, where Digby from Hullabaloo and Bill Mann from the Whiskey Bar had two posts about basically the same subject. And this is what Digby says. Digby says, if you have a chance to win, you win. Not just because you want to do a victory lap, but because you care about the country, and you'll do anything you can to stop the hell these crazy bastards have unleashed and start down a new path. Do you want them to continue to have free reign over the next 2 years while they pump up this phony threat with Iran? Do you want them to be in charge of another natural disaster like Katrina? More money thrown into the black maw of Republican contributors? What are you thinking? This is why the establishment is becoming irrelevant. It isn't a game to us hicks out here in America. This is our lives people are talking about. And that was what Digby had to say. And on the other hand, we have Bill Mann. And Bill Mann says, given the size and power of the forces we face, the GOP machine, big media, the national security leviathan, corporate bribe masters, it seems obvious that only a major upheaval on the order of FDR's landslide 1932 election has any chance of changing the country's direction in any fundamental way. I'm not even sure that kind of change is even possible anymore, but I'm reasonably sure it's not going to happen just because the Dems managed to win back a razor-thin majority in the House of Representatives this November. Part of me thinks it would be better to stay completely out of power until there is a tidal wave of popular discontent, even desperation, that will wash the GOP and the authoritarian right out of power for a generation. And as much as I agree with what Digby had to say to a certain extent, I'm really more in line of what Bill Mann talks about. In order for us to have a win that has any real meaning, we need to have a foundation. And we're just in the process of building a foundation now. It takes time. It takes time. Winning a victory in the congressional race in 06 doesn't mean very much, considering the lack of any kind of competence of the current Democratic leadership. And that's really, you know, what it comes down to me. What good does winning do if you've got guys like Joe Lieberman and got people like Hillary Clinton who are, you know, busy pandering to the right? And I don't give a damn what Jim says. You know, that's not how you win elections. Do you think they try to pander to us? Do you think they try to take anything we say into consideration? No. They take the Nixon strategy. Divide the country and take the larger half. And Republicans have added on the tack of just making politics so distasteful that nobody with any kind of decency would ever want to become a part of it. And it's just sickening. It's just sickening. And I'm not going to be out here and suck up to Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell just because some people think, well, maybe, you know, we can get some of their votes. You know what? I don't want their damn votes. You know, I'm not going to sit there and go to a Ku Klux Klan meeting because they have a couple hundred people who might vote for me in the election. They're wrong, they're dangerous to the country, and while they deserve to have a voice, their problem is they think they need to be the only voice. And the Democratic leadership right now is just as much in debt to corporate America as their Republican counterparts, and make no mistake, it's corporate America and our willingness to acquiesce to its power and the psychology behind that acquiescence. That's the main cause of our problems. The politicians, the George W. Bushes, the Pat Robertsons, the Jerry Falwells, these are just symptoms of much bigger problems that we've got as a nation, as a people. Yeah, Digby, it is our lives people are talking about. But I can't see that they're going to be any more improved by these marginal victories. It is us. It is us. We are the problem. We're the ones who allowed this to all happen ages ago when we decided that Rush Limbaugh and people like him had our best interests at heart, even when they clearly didn't. It's us that allowed Robertson and Falwell to shape our ideas on religion by tossing tons of money their way until they figured out, like I said, that they can make an even bigger killing writing the Social Security checks. It's us. There's where the problem is. We're the ones who are sitting back and letting them get away with it because they don't think politics matters or because they're only focused on their immediate lives to the exclusion of everything else. More people still cares about who wins on American Idol than who sits in the White House. even if they can remember the names. As Hedley Lamarr says, they're not leaving, they're staying in droves, if you remember that from Blazing Saddles. Now, we need to not only defeat the Republicans, we need to crush them as a political force. Time and time again, whenever conservatives and whenever Republicans in particular, because the Republicans are the conservative party, whenever they wind up with any kind of power, and no one doubts their skill in getting it, all they know how to do with that power is grab for more until their overreaching turns into disaster. The last time that conservatives had this much power in the states, we had a Great Depression. We came damn close to a communist revolution in this country. You know, what Roosevelt and the New Deal did was a very middle-of-the-road thing compared to what was going on with the rest of the world, which was going towards either communism or fascism. And what Roosevelt and the New Dealers did was very, very middle-of-the-road in comparison. And, in fact, Roosevelt was criticized by some who were further left than he was for not going far enough. But Roosevelt was a master politician, and he understood how far the country would go and knew what he needed to do. And you know what? The things that they did really, really worked, and they had a real impact on people's lives. And I've heard Bob talk about this on his show before, and I've heard others talk about this. You know, especially when you live down here in the South, the Tennessee Valley Authority, rural electrification, all these made a huge difference to the South. And if the South wants to know why they're political power now, it's because we gave them the electricity. Because no big business would have done it. There's no corporation that would have undergone this massive program. And the same with the highway system. And that was started by Eisenhower. And Eisenhower was a Republican, true, but God, compared to these guys, he was very liberal. It's us. We're the problem. We're the problem. We have to wipe out not just the Republicans, we have to wipe out conservatism. I got to say it right. I've been using conservatism. That's wrong. Conservatism. It's the scourge of history under any name. The false idea, and it's a false idea that says one group of people is inherently better than others because of who their father was or because of how much money or political power they managed to accumulate. Whether you're talking about Egyptian pharaohs, Roman emperors, European, Arab, or Asian monarchies, laissez-faire capitalists of the industrial age, fascist dictators, communist premiers, or modern-day neoconservatives, the result is always the same. A few people get a lot, and everybody else fights for scrap. The entire ideology is a disease, and some diseases need to be cut out. What we need is a drastic change in the way humankind operates as a global community. And weak Democrats winning a few House seats in 2006, nice as that.